Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. We are moving right along through free agency. And as I mentioned to those who tuned in and listened to the reaction podcast, after the Bengals signed Lael Collins, he told us today that is the pronunciation of his name. And if you can't say it, he said, just call me LC. So as I teased on that episode, breaking down how the Bengals were able to acquire LC, that we would have a special guest later on this week for this podcast, and I'm really excited for this conversation. There's not a person in the Bengals building that knows these free agents more than Steven Radicevic, who is the Bengals director of pro personnel. So his role basically year round is to keep a pulse and do in-depth background and studies of players who are going to become free agents and what the market is going to look like. And then he kind of sets the plan and gives the information to Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor, and they're able to form their free agency plan based off of the work that Steven and the rest of the Bengals scouting staff does. So he knows the ins and outs of all of the players that the Bengals signed in free agency. He's been working on this since December, and he's been a huge part behind the scenes of how the Bengals have been able to turn their roster around and get to the Super Bowl last year. So I wanted to have Steven on to tell us a little bit more about guys like Alex Kappa, Ted Karras, Hayden Hurst, LC, why they wanted to re-sign Eli Apple and BJ Hill. It was a great conversation I had with Steven. I also wanted to ask him, does he feel like the Bengals are kind of changing the landscape of how teams are doing business in free agency? It seems like more than ever now, there's been more offseason activity. And it's hard to not see what the Bengals did last year and the acquisitions they made in free agency in guys like Mike Hilton, Chidobe Awuzie, Larry Ogunjobi, Trey Hendrickson, and the impact they had, and not think that the Bengals are kind of setting the tone for the rest of the league. So here is my conversation with Steven. I hope you guys enjoy it. Well, I'm pretty excited about this next guest we have on Bengals Beat Podcast. I teased it earlier on in the week when I told you all to make sure to tune back in for our second episode coming out this week, because that is, I have now on the Bengals Director of Pro Personnel, Steven Radicevic, and he's joining me. He's inside Paul Brown Stadium working behind the scenes, and he's a guy, Bengals fans, where when you want to know, obviously we've had a chance to talk to Zach Taylor and over the last couple of weeks to discuss some of the free agent moves that this team has made, but Steven has been working on these guys for months. So if there's anyone that can tell you the fine details and just everything you want to know about your new Bengals, it's Steven. So Steven, thank you so much for giving me some of your time, this busy schedule. And I'm really excited for our chat because I got a lot of questions for you.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me on, and feel free to shoot away.
Well, I guess I don't even know where to start. Okay, so let's just start with your process in this last year. I think the main question that I would want to start our conversation by asking is, at what point was it after the Super Bowl and kind of what happened with the 7 sacks and the way the Super Bowl ended, or was it before then? At what point did you guys as a staff identify, because it was very obvious last year during free agency, you were going to overhaul the defense and really focus on adding to the defense. And you did that with guys like Chidobe Awuzie, Larry Ogunjobi, Trey Hendrickson, and Mike Hilton. And this year, it was clear based off of your first two signings that it was going to be the offensive line you invested in. So can you just tell us a little bit about the process of how you guys set your free agency strategy, when you do, and how it became, okay, these are our top targets by signing Alex Kappa and Ted Karras first?
Really, when you go back to like last year's free agency, we wanted to do it then. I don't think we were as comfortable with the options there. In free agency this year, we felt like there were some quality players, especially on the interior line, that we felt like we could address some holes there. So we really with the whole process with our guys. So we'll start watching a lot of the guys that are going to be free agents in December, try to put them in order. Mm-hmm. We've got a list, whatever, 50 guards or 40 guards, try to get them in the right order. So really that's the first step, writing reports on them, digging in on them a little bit, character, background, medical. So we're spending most of December and January doing that. So Mike Potts cross-checked the O-line. So he did a majority of those O-linemen. And then Duke and I would come in and watch maybe the top 10 or 15 guys that he identified. And then from there, you give it to the coaches after the Super Bowl. The coaches will watch those 10, 15 players that we identified. And then that list maybe gets a little bit shorter to say there's five guards that we wanted to focus in on in free agency that we felt strongly about, that we felt like we're going to help the team. And that's really the approach that we took this year, especially with the O-line group.
So, well, I guess we'll start with the first player you signed in free agency, and that was Alex Kappa. And obviously, I just wanted to point out, you said that you, at that point, give your 10 players to the coaches to watch. Frank Pollock made sure to tell us when we got a chance to talk to him, the media at the combine, that the minutes he spent talking to us were minutes that he was not spending evaluating offensive line prospects. So we let him go pretty easily because we knew he had a lot of work to do. So let's start with Alex Kappa. Can you tell me a little bit about the scouting report you put together on Kappa? Obviously it's well documented what he was able to do blocking for Tom Brady, winning a ring in Tampa, his durability and the fact that he rarely misses any time. But is there anything else you can tell us about your deep dive study into Alex Kappa and what Bengals fans can expect from him at right guard?
Like you hit on the durability, was a huge part. He's played with Tom Brady, he's played in huge games, and the leadership that we knew he was going to bring to that room were big parts of it. But he's as a player, he's heavy. He's got a really strong anchor to him. He can get movement in the run game, and he's an efficient pass blocker. So as a player, we felt like he was going to be a plug and play immediate upgrade for us and really improve that room.
With Alex Kappa, was there a game in particular that really stood out to you when you watched him? Because now it's so easy for all of us to go back and watch film. So if there was a game that you would say for us who want to know more about Alex Kappa and kind of get a little inside look at what you guys thought was one of his best games, is there anything that comes to mind, or do you guys more look at it more comprehensively from a season long?
Yeah, we'll watch the whole season, as many games as we can. And that's really the thing that we loved about those two guys, Ted and Kappa, were how consistent they were as players. And we love that. I mean, they were probably two of the most consistent players that we watched on the interior line, and checked every other box that we were looking for with the intangibles.
So you just led us to our next player. Let's talk about Ted Karras a little bit. I asked Zach if he was going to compete at center and guard, obviously, because it was, I asked Zach right before you guys had released Trey Hopkins, but that was an obvious thing many of us expected you guys to do from a cap hit standpoint. He said Karras is going to be the center. What did you like most about your study on Ted Karras?
Like I said, the same thing with Kappa, very consistent. You knew what you were going to get. He's a physical player. He finishes blocks, very limited in the production, or very limited pressures given up. When you watch his tape, he doesn't get collapsed in the pocket. He's got a really good anchor to him. Like I said, both those guys were just so consistent when you watch the tape, and we knew that there were going to be upgrades for us.
And then, since we're talking about the offensive line, let's go straight to the most recent acquisition you guys made, the one over the weekend, the one that many fans were waiting on. And that was we actually asked him how to pronounce his name today. He said it's La-El, but he said we can just call him LC. So LC, let's talk about that situation, because that one was different. And I asked Zach Taylor about that a little bit today, because was he a player that you studied in December thinking maybe the Cowboys would shop him or he might be released? Or did you first kind of dig into him when you heard the rumblings that the Cowboys could potentially be looking to trade him?
We have a cap and trade list that we keep, and players that may get cap casualties may get cut, mm-hmm. or players that you may be available for trade. So we had an idea that maybe there was that possibility. Then there was the report, which really just kind of set things off here. We're watching the tape just to confirm what we knew about him as a player. All that stuff checked out. When we watched the tape, he's very impressive. And then when he gets released, obviously Frank had the relationship with him,
right.
And we were able to target him and go after him.
So when you said you guys went and kind of watched the tape when you realized that he was released by the Cowboys, what stood out to you most about LC's game?
His physicality. It's probably number one. I mean, the guy finishes blocks. There's that play with him chasing down the guy that had pushed Watson out. Not Watson, Dak. He's got his quarterbacks back. He's obviously Frank had him, spoke very highly of him. So he was a player that we knew we were going to target. Glad we got him.
I think the fans are pretty excited too. Did you hear about the whole situation at Kenwood Mall and how someone stopped him, and the fans are now a part of the recruiting efforts, apparently?
Yeah. I saw the picture of that one fan. I don't know if there are any other ones, but I saw the picture of the one fan that took a snapped one with him. But I know he spent a decent amount of his day at the Kenwood Mall that day.
So for that player in particular, can you just talk us through the Friday to Sunday? What goes into you brought him in for a visit. He got into town late St. Patrick's Day night, which was Thursday night. And then he spent all day Friday visiting with the different people throughout the building. Where do you guys go from him taking that visit to the deal actually getting done on Sunday? What are some of the things that go on behind the scenes that maybe explain why deals like that take some time to be ironed out?
So he got in Friday, spent the day in the facility. Then they had the evening out at Joe's house, which I'm sure you all heard of.
Crackers and cupcakes were what was served.
Really? Nice. But obviously, I think that was a huge part for him, and just getting one to spend some time with the O-lineman that we just brought in, obviously mm-hmm. spending time with Joe. And then after that, I felt like he wanted to be here. And you're really just trying to iron out some of the smaller things on the contract side of it with the agents. And that takes time. So that was kind of the hold up there, but we're glad it got ironed out.
One more thing on LC. For him, obviously you talked about his physicality. Last year, Zach said the off-season strategy and plan was you guys wanted to get more explosive on offense. And obviously Ja'Marr Chase was a big part of that. And you saw the dividends of that with that, you guys being one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL. What would you say, if you could maybe summarize it into one word or a couple words, was kind of the vision and plan with these offensive linemen? Was it you guys wanted to get stronger, more tough, powerful? What exactly were you guys looking for that now that you have these three, you can say kind of summarizes what you guys were hoping to do with just the offensive line?
We wanted to get guys that were proven and had played in big time games, have been proven offensive linemen. So I think all three of those guys would check that box. They're all young, relatively young in their careers, and we felt like they were ascending players. They all have the right attitude, like we talked about. To play that position takes a different type of mindset. As you guys have heard, the Frank Pollard glass eater. I mean, that's what you're looking for. Those guys checked every box that we were looking for this offseason. That's the route we went with those guys.
So I'm going to move on to the defensive side of the ball before I come back to Hayden Hurst, because I do want to get your thoughts on Hayden Hurst. Eli Apple, the other position of, I guess you could say, biggest need for this team, there wasn't many heading into free agency, was who's going to start opposite of Chidobe Awuzie, obviously knowing you guys eventually moved on from Trey Waynes and that not being able to work out due to his injuries. I know from covering the team the whole last season that Lou Anarumo was high on just the progress Eli made throughout the season, as was Zach Taylor. Was it a case of when you're going through from a pro side, cornerbacks now become a position that's very expensive. If you want to add a top cornerback, you're going to have to pay for it. And do you go position, when you stack your board, do you go offensive line is kind of our biggest area we need to attack and how you allot certain amount of money there, and then you kind of do that with positions? Or how does that all work out where you decide, okay, well, maybe we're not going to be able to go after a guy like JC Jackson or one of those top free agent cornerbacks because of what you did from the offensive line in the first two signings?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. You have X amount of space with the cap, and we felt like if we had this, you know, X amount towards the O-line, X amount towards the corner position, X amount towards the D-tackle or D-tackles, you try to figure out, you know, their price ranges and free agency and who's looking for what, and how to make it all fit, you know, get those 2 to 3 O-linemen in that price range, how to get the corner in that price range, how to get the D-tackle in that price range. That's kind of how it, you know, sometimes you end up having to pivot a little bit. This year we were fortunate to where we really didn't have too much.
So what did you think about the free agency cornerback market this year? Was it what you expected? Was it higher than what you expected for what some of these guys went for? And how did you guys come back to saying, okay, we saw what the market was, we're comfortable bringing back Eli Apple?
Yeah, corners are always going to get paid, and I think they clearly did this year. It wasn't as high of a year as it's been in quality players it's been in years past, but there were solid players there. Eli had a huge jump for us this last year. He played well, played in big games, made some big plays, made some interceptions. Made some big tackles. So we were happy. We wanted Eli back, and we're fortunate that we were able to get him back.
So Eli Apple obviously fills your immediate need, but you know, the free agency period is not over. Plus the draft, by no means is any position group solidified at this point in the off season. Let's go back to offense. And another guy that you signed is Hayden Hurst, a player who knows the AFC North from his time in Baltimore, then went to Atlanta. And the biggest takeaway that I had from our first press conference with Hayden is that he is really excited for just the opportunity here in Cincinnati. You kind of got the vibe that he didn't necessarily feel like he was used the right way or used enough, because he just said, I'm excited for the chance and the opportunity. And I feel like Zach Taylor is going to give me that. CJ Uzomah was a fan favorite for many of the listeners listening to this podcast. Obviously, CJ had a big year, career year last year. Were you guys expecting the market to be what it was for the tight ends? That was, I think, a position that might have been the biggest surprise to me in free agency, is how many tight ends were signed and for the price that some of them were signed for.
Yeah, I agree. Tight ends was probably the biggest surprise for me as well. I think the issue this year was when some of the top guys ended up getting tagged, and that kind of drove the second tier tight end market up, which is why I think a lot of those guys ended up getting pretty good contracts. So we're excited to get Hayden. I think he's going to be a great fit for us. He has, like you said, he's had a couple of bad breaks just being the number two tight end, whether it's in Baltimore or Atlanta with them drafting Pitts last year. He's definitely going to get a shot this year and should have pretty good production with Joe this year.
So those, I think I'm not, of all of the new players, I think I covered all of them, right?
Yeah, I think you've got all of our guys. Oh, BJ.
Yeah. Can we talk about a position of strength that you know really well? And I think I kind of want to go back to last year before I ask you about BJ. Did what you got from your defensive line this year with guys like Larry, Sam, Trey, DJ, obviously, did it surprise you how good they were and how much it affected the defensive success overall? And I guess from what you saw, obviously, you know, you always want to have a good defensive line and good pass rushers, but did that kind of tell you guys a little bit more about, hey, like we need to continue to invest in the defensive line because this is how much of a difference it made for us? Because you guys, it's not talked about enough, and I try to bring it up a lot, but you went from being last in sacks the year before this season to, I believe it was either top five or top seven, and also a top five rushing defense, which that pretty much all starts with the way you guys play up front. What did you think about the performance of the defensive line and some of those guys you spearheaded to make sure you guys acquired? What did you think of the season that they had? And then I'll ask you a little bit more about BJ and the process of getting him when you guys did.
Yeah, they obviously had a good year. They all play really well together. Their chemistry is great in that room. And I think, you know, it goes from Coach Javi to Lou to Zach, the type of players that we've wanted to bring in here the last couple of years. You know, Sam and Trey feed off of each other's energy off the edge. DJ and BJ feed off of each other up the middle. And obviously Larry did a great job for us last year. Josh Tupau does a great job. You know, the guys know their role and they're not, you know, hungry, you know, they're not hungry for stats. They all want to work together to help win. And like I said, they feed off of each other, which is great. So I don't think we were surprised by it. I think we knew what type of players they were just fortunate that they played the way they did, especially second half of the year.
So the decision to re-sign BJ, I kind of got the vibe and I actually tweeted it. I talked to both Zach and Duke. They were on my podcast at the combine and they both mentioned BJ without me having to mention him. So that told me something that you guys were pretty high on him. But for you to get the type of production you were able to get from BJ in the short time that you did, obviously with him being traded the week before week one, what can you say about the year BJ had and why did you guys want to make sure he was the big ticket, I guess, defensive player that you guys re-signed this season as opposed to going out and trying to get another player maybe from a different team?
He really proved himself, you know, every day in the locker room, on and off the field. His work ethic is outstanding. He pushes other guys. It was an interesting story with him in New York and just kind of being the backup role player there with the players that they had ahead of him. He really came here, embraced his role, and took off right away. I want to say it was that Minnesota game, right? He had the two sacks. Yeah. It was hot off the start and carried on throughout the whole year. And obviously the playoffs, he was played a huge part in us with our success. And he said he's made of the right stuff. And we're glad we were able to get him back.
With a guy like BJ and the situation that you guys were in, given that you weren't making this decision in March, how does the director of pro personnel find a guy like BJ, who's a reserve for the Giants? Did you just go through every team and key in on, you know, all of their players in hopes that, or thinking maybe these guys might get, like, how did you guys find BJ? How did you find him in particular?
We had actually started talking about him 2 years ago when we had got thinned out on the D line, especially the D tackles. And so you're going through every roster and you're looking at who has the deepest D tackles in the NFL. And obviously the Giants, they had a great group. So you're starting to feel them out, you know, 2 years ago and they did not want to do the trade then. Fast forward a year later, Billy Price, we had Billy Price and Trey Hopkins was going to be the starter last year. and the Giants were looking for a center. So it ended up, they knew that we had the interest 2 years ago. They reached out, we were still looking for another interior rusher. So the needs for both worked out, and we did the trade. So that's how that started.
So how do you feel at this point about the depth that you have at the interior defensive line? Because you're getting Joseph Osai back, obviously. I know you guys were pretty high on him. And then the injury took place and he missed the whole season, but you get him back. So overall, how do you feel about the depth of the interior defensive line and that group as a whole right now?
I think our depth on the entire D line's good right now. I think you're always going to look to try to, if there's a player you can upgrade there, you're always looking for ways to upgrade. But obviously, we've got some young, talented players, and we'll just see how the rest of the year goes. The rest of the off season, you know, BJ wasn't in our thoughts this time a year ago, and ended up trading for him and had a huge role in our playoff success. So.
Well, I just have a couple more questions for you. And I wanted to ask you, I know I asked you about the impact that some of those guys that you signed in free agency had on the defensive line, but from the overall standpoint of the free agency class, Mike Hilton, Cheeto, Larry, Trey, was there a player that maybe exceeded your expectations in terms of, obviously you guys do a lot of homework on these guys, so you know what you're getting, but was there a player that ended up being that you just kind of sat to yourself when you're watching the game and say, yeah, he's better than I thought?
No, because we really liked a lot of these guys that we've gone after. It's Cheeto, he gets the buzz, I guess, for being the biggest steal, but we knew he had it in him, and he had the ability. He had a couple really good years in Dallas, had his contract year where he had some injuries that he was fighting through. But we knew what type of player he was. We knew how good he was. Mike was an unbelievable player in Pittsburgh. Trey Hendrickson was a great player for the Saints. And the list goes on, but there's not one that I think we've signed and it's been a shock. I think we knew what they were going to be.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that kind of leads me into my next question. In a lot of ways, a lot of what we've seen from teams in the offseason so far is that there seems to be a narrative going on right now that because of what you guys were able to do in terms of the free agents you added last year and the draft, that you could turn a franchise around in a year and you could get to the Super Bowl in a year. So there's a lot of talk right now saying that the Bengals kind of changed the way teams are doing business, because for a couple years before that, there was a narrative that it's hard to win games in free agency. And more often than not, you spend more than you actually get back in investing. And you guys showed, because you guys hit on all of your free agents last year and they came in and were impact players, that you can really overhaul a whole side of the ball through free agency if you hit on the right ones. Do you see, based off of what you see going on in the AFC in particular and the amount of just movement across the league, do you feel like we're at an all-time high with kind of like activity in the offseason in terms of teams trying to improve their roster through free agency more than maybe years past?
It definitely seems like it, and it could just be because I feel like there's obviously been more quarterback movement this offseason than there's been in previous years, especially with big time players. But look at the Tyreek deal today. It just seems like every day there's a big player signing, getting traded, getting cut. I mean, it'll be, and I don't think we're done. I think there's going to be another couple weeks of this going on, but. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it's nice. It'd be nice if teams thought that we were the model, but I'm sure every GM's different in the way they want to approach it and the way they think.
What do you think about the AFC right now? Obviously, there's been so much change, especially at the quarterback position. Are you Does that excite you? Obviously, you're not coaching, but you play a huge role in this team's success and what they do on the field. So for you, with some of these moves being made in the AFC, particular also in the AFC North, just your general thoughts on the offseason that the AFC has had?
It's been obviously good for the AFC. It's going to be competitive. It's going to be a tough conference to win every year. But we definitely have the right trigger man for it. So it'll be fun.
I'll wrap it up with just one more question for you. What is life like for you in your role after you get on the first wave of free agency? And I know obviously with the Bengals, with the scouting staff being smaller than most teams, how involved are you in the draft process? And what is like the next 2 months like for you in particular in this role?
So right now there's still some smaller, lower level deals. There's still some players that we want to try to get back, and maybe still some holes that we want to try to fill here before the draft. So working through that. And then next week I'll go to a few pro days, then back in the office. And in April we're meeting on the draft players that are coming up in the draft. And I ended up going to about 20 schools last year. So read the reports on those guys. And then get through the draft process. Rookie mini camp will be here. And then after that, try to catch my breath, spend some time with the family.
Yeah, me too. All right, Steven, thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed our conversation. And hopefully I get to meet you in the near future now that hopefully we're having a normal NFL season.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kelsey.
Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings, and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download USA Today Sports Plus from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus, fan harder. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I really enjoyed that conversation with Steven. I learned so much about what goes on behind the scenes and how the Bengals go about getting these players that they acquire in free agency and how much work has to go into cross-check and make sure that these are the type of players that can A, come in and make an impact, but they're also the type of culture players that this franchise is looking for. And the Bengals showed, and based off of Steven's comments, look, there's no such thing as rebuilding anymore in the NFL. And as we've seen with all of the offseason activity, whether it be Russell Wilson being traded to the Denver Broncos, Tyreek Hill being traded to the Miami Dolphins. I mean, those are teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. And now these offseason acquisitions they made put them in the race to be contenders in the AFC, and you do that in just one offseason, and the Bengals sure look like they are setting the tone. And what they did last year put the rest of the league on notice, and Steven is a huge part of how the Bengals have been successful over these last couple of years. So I hope you guys enjoy the conversation, and I will be back with some more offseason podcasts, so be sure to check back out and stay tuned for more episodes of the Bengals Beat Podcast.